There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. This is our new daily podcast where we condense 4 hours of the business breakfast into a tasty morsel of about half an hour or 45 minutes. We've got lots of interviews, chat and commentary coming up. First of all, though, these are our top business headlines.
Dubai Eye 103.8 Business Headlines.
In association with insurancemarket.ae.
Dubai property market will be extremely tenant friendly this year. According to the broker Core Savills, it says rents are falling for the third year in a row.
Staying with real estate, but with a more positive slant, TECOM says 500 new firms joined its business parks last year. TECOM now has 5,600 companies in parks such as Dubai Internet City and Dubai Design District.
Oil will hit $90 a barrel within 2 years, according to the investment bank Morgan Stanley. It says demands for jet fuel and diesel will drive demand.
Dubai Eye 103.8 Business Headlines.
In association with insurancemarket.ae. Compare insurance for your car, health, home or business with insurancemarket.ae.
So those are the business headlines today. More on the real estate stories a little bit later on. But Mark, what's been catching your attention today?
Well, a number of stories I like. One is the US toy industry looking for some consolidation. Because when Toys R Us went bust, that took away one of the major outlets, one of the major conduits for companies to sell their toys, of course. Now, the big companies are fine because they can go into any of the big department stores and go into Nordstrom, Macy's, said, put this on the shelves. The little companies now have lost an absolute selling corridor, if you like, to the public, because the big stores, the Macy's, don't want to put the small companies. They want the G.I. Joes and the Barbies on the shelves, the things that they know are going to sell. They don't want exploratory toys, new toys to the market. So they see that there's a lot of small companies who can't get that shelf space will have to get together to become big companies, which of course in turn means more competition for Hasbro and Mattel.
More on that a little bit later on. Other stories you've been looking at, VAT introduced here in the UAE on the 1st of January. There is one country that is abolishing VAT. We like this. Tell us more about them. Who's this?
Yeah, this is not Kuwait, because Kuwait are actually putting their VAT back to 2021. This is Malaysia. The finance ministry says that they are going to drop their 6% goods and service tax, the GST, which is effectively VAT. And this is because the ousted Prime Minister Najib Razak introduced the tax back in 2015. But now that Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad is once again the Prime Minister of Malaysia, he said that basically we don't need it. We've got enough money, and it will help people because the cost of living is rising. So, you know, a country taking away tax is I was about to say unique. I'm sure it's happened before, but it's rare.
We should send some guys over there to figure this out, because I think a lot of people would be quite happy to see that here. Finally, what else has caught your attention today?
Elder son of the Murdoch empire, Lachlan. His father, of course, Rupert Murdoch, said that Lachlan will be chief executive and chairman of the new company that it plans to form after selling some of its holdings to Disney. His father, Rupert, of course, is still going to serve as co-chairman of the new firm and expected to focus on news and sport. But Lachlan is very much sort of the favoured son. James is going to wander off into the wilderness, possibly starting a venture capital business. So those are the sort of things I'm interested in, Rich. What's been catching your attention this morning?
Well, I like the property story. This two real estate markets in one city. The really downbeat report from Core Savills about property, saying that prices are falling in the sales market, rents are falling. More on that a little bit later on in the podcast. But I got to say, my favourite story today is Saudi Arabia continuing its crackdown on corruption. But there ain't no billionaires or princes involved. This is a 32-year-old football referee. In some ways, actually, Mark, it's a really sad story. This is Fahad Al-Madassi, who is a rising star of referees in Saudi Arabia. He was refereeing the Saudi Cup final this year, the King's Cup between Al-Faisali and Al-Ittihad. He's so good, he's on the elite panel of global referees, and he was set to go to the World Cup in Russia in just a couple of weeks' time. But his career is over, it's in tatters. And that's because he has tried to bribe or get a bribe from the chairman of Al Ittihad, one of the clubs in the King's Cup final that he was going to be refereeing. He sent them a WhatsApp saying, can I have some money and I'll fix it for your team to win. And to be fair, the president of Al Ittihad, Hamad Al Sunayeh, just completely ignored this. Straight away went to the Saudi Football Federation, said, this guy's trying to throw the football match. Now, I'm glad he's banned for life. This kind of corruption cannot be tolerated. But 32 years old, his career, he had the world at his feet, and his career's in tatters.
Well, in technical terms, I don't know why on earth he'd use a sort of trackable vehicle and conduit like WhatsApp. I mean, you could cycle up to somebody in a dark alley and go, psst, you know, want to throw a game or want to win some money. I don't really understand the backstory on this and why the referee did that in the first place. What was he standing to gain? Had he been offered something from somebody else?
No, he just wanted money. Give me some money, we don't know how much, quite a bit, and I will, as the referee, throw the game for you. I'll send off a couple of the opponent's players. I'll give you a couple of dodgy penalties. I can make sure you win if you give me a bunch of cash. Literally, a bag full of cash.
I had visions of syndicates in the Far East and sort of money being placed on games, but not that.
I think it was a little bit more simple than that. But anyway, his career is over. Age 32, Farhad Al-Madassi, one of my favourite stories today. I also like the influencer story, the fact that the UAE is going to make influencers get a license and pay 15,000 dirhams for that license. And we will get more on that story a little bit later on. We're going to hear from a lawyer. We're going to hear from Fiona Robertson of Al Tamimi on the influencer registration story. We're also going to get more on the big energy story of the week, Abu Dhabi's 165 billion dirham plan to expand its refining, its petrochemicals down in Ruwais. That's kind of between Abu Dhabi City and the Saudi border. Massive plans there. Sean Evers was there. He was in the room. We've been speaking to him this morning. And also talking energy, but of the solar variety. This is interesting. Mall of the Emirates is putting solar panels on its roof. More on that in a couple of moments' time.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
So we had a great chat this morning about influencer marketing because the Dubai government has introduced some new rules. From the end of this month, says the National Media Council, anyone who is accepting money for a post on Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter, whatever it will be, a paid-for influencer, is going to need a license, and that license will cost you 15,000 dirhams on top of your trade license. Now, we're going to hear from a lawyer in a second, Fiona Robertson of Al Tamimi, but first of all, let's hear from the queen of influencers, Huda Kattan, or Huda Beauty, with 15 million followers worldwide. She told us a while ago how she started off.
You just don't really know when it's going to take off, and I was blogging for about 12 months before I actually saw really anything happen. I actually remember it was almost 12 months, it was like 11 and a half months, and I saw a girl from Japan. She left a comment on my blog, and I was just like, oh my gosh, it's happening. People from around the world are commenting, it's happening. It was only one girl. It was like a catalyst. It's happening. Like, this is like what you need to like keep pushing through. And then I, you know, slowly started to see people from like Oman and like Africa and America and South America. So that was kind of reassuring, and it kind of let me know that what I was doing was resonating with some people.
So 15,000 dirhams a year to be licensed in the UAE as an influencer. That is not a problem for the likes of Huda Kattan, very established, charging hundreds of thousands of dirhams per post. But what about the people when they're starting off? Because Huda started off doing it just for fun, and it gradually built up. How did the so-called micro-influencers, how were they going to get up and running? Where's the next Huda Beauty going to come from if you've got to pay that 15,000 dirham for a license? Well, we've been speaking to a lawyer now. We've been speaking to one of the lawyers from Al Tamimi. She's a senior lawyer within particularly their media department. She's Fiona Robertson, media and entertainment lawyer at Al Tamimi. We asked her about this. How are people going to get started when they've got to pay these fees? This is what she had to say.
The Media Council is essentially trying to license people who are undertaking media activities online. So unlike ARN, which is a licensed media operator and has its license through the Media Council already, people are undertaking media activities without that license. The aim of this law is to pull the online activities and get it licensed.
Is there any international precedent for this? Any other countries do something similar?
Not that I'm aware of.
Realistically, it's going to be about 15,000 dirhams, we think, to get a license. What kind of license do they have to get, and where do they have to get it from?
There's a link on the National Media Council website. It's the same as any other license that you would get from the NMC. So you go in, you register, and then you fill in send you details and you request the particular type of license that you want.
15,000 dirhams is the figure we're looking at. Is that on top of your trade license?
Absolutely. Yes, it is.
Right. So really, just to be in business, you're looking at the best part of 50,000 dirhams, aren't you?
But you should already have your trade license anyway if you're operating legally, because if you're invoicing and undertaking business in the UAE, you should have that.
But we heard from Huda there, and often these things just start out organically. They're kitchen table businesses. Mm-hmm. Huda didn't start out with a business plan saying, I'm going to be an influencer. But most people get, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand dirhams. Are they going to be regulated out of existence?
We're not sure at the moment how the National Media Council is going to react and whether they're going to target the micro-influencers, the sort of people you're talking about, or whether they're going to go after the bigger fish.
Is this a tax thing or is it a security thing? Do they just want to know who's out there, or are they really hoping to raise a few dirhams?
The thing that is interesting when you actually read the regulation is that there are about 5 or 6 references to the media content regulations within that. They want compliance with that, and I think that is the bigger concern for the National Media Council.
And it's not just influencers. We're all thinking about Instagram influencers, and they are part of it, but it's broader than that. What else falls under this legal umbrella?
It is actually anyone who runs a website that's undertaking what they consider to be media activities. So, for example, if you're reselling third-party goods, therefore you're undertaking classified advertising, that's a media activity. But also, if you're selling anything that is media, such as books or podcasting, if you're selling that sort of media material, then you need a license.
That's the voice of Fiona Robertson from the law firm Alton Mimi.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
What else is interesting this morning, Rich?
It's these two different real estate markets in the same city. One headline is this: Dubai's tenant-friendly residential market to persist through 2018. That's according to Core Savills, the broker. Very gloomy outlook on the real estate market. Another headline is much more upbeat: Dubai's TCOM hosts 5,600 firms after 2017 growth. Let's start with the glass half empty, first of all. This report from Core Savills says challenges of oversupply, mismatch between offer and supply, weakening demand across other sectors such as office and retail, and relatively lower levels of household income growth are all exerting downward pressure on the market. They say the Dubai real estate market, particularly residential, but not only residential, has been declining for the past 3 years or so. 2018, no exception. We've seen declines in the first quarter of this year, and they say that will continue. However, TCOM, which operates a number of business parks, reporting a much healthier situation. Now, this is the company that has the parks we all know about. Internet City, probably one of the most high-profile ones. Dubai Media City, Dubai Knowledge Park, down by the coast. They were the original ones. Then you've got newer ones like Dubai Studio City, where we are right now. Dubai Design District as well. Dubai Science Park. 500 new companies registered in those parks last year. They now have 5,600 companies. They employ more than 90,000 people, 162 nationalities. Abdullah Al-Habai is the chairman of Dubai Holding, ultimate parent of TCOM. He says that group is at the forefront of national institutions that support Dubai's efforts to transform into a knowledge-driven economy. And this is not just paying lip service to a knowledge-driven economy. It's 5,600 companies and 90,000 people working in the knowledge economy.
Go West, young man. This is, I think, all down to hardship and people looking for new markets and travelling, basically. When things are hard, you look further afield for your market. So people from other markets are going to be looking at coming here just as much as we are looking at a wider market space to make a bit of money out. And it's happens in economic times that people travel more. You spread yourself thinner to try and get some business.
Well, and it's not just the companies from Europe and North America doing it. It's Chinese companies as well. TCOM points to several high-profile developments that they've had in these projects. The Huawei, the big Chinese technology company, setting up its new regional headquarters in Dubai Internet City is one of the ones that it's looking at. And just around the corner from here, Dubai Science Park, which has never been one of the most thriving of TCOM's parks, you know, Internet City, Media City, we know huge successes. But the two big towers in the middle of Dubai Science Park, and I live next door to them, they've been there for about 10 years standing idle. They're finished. They're done. So that's going to see quite a bit of activity in the coming years or so.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
You are listening to The Bite Size Business Breakfast, a new podcast from the BB team. It converts the four-hour business breakfast into a tasty snack-sized morsel.
It's not easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves.
It's not that easy being green. Kermit the Frog from Sesame Street. And it was announced this week that all of the Emirates is going to become partially solar powered in order to consume cleaner, greener, of course, energy, and cut back on power bills. The company responsible for helping them do that is Enova, and we're very pleased now to welcome to the studio the CEO of Enova, Anne Le Guenec. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for coming in. Now, talk us through your contribution to MOE's greenness and power saving. What physical installations did you put on the roofs?
Well, I think that I should talk first about this great initiative that Majidel Futaim took, deciding to be net positive by 2040. And this is the reason why they set this program of putting some solar panel on their malls. And we started with Mall of the Emirates, but we have much more facilities to come. On Mall of the Emirates that we actually commissioned recently, we've installed a bit more than 7,200 solar panel, photovoltaic panels. It represents somehow two football pitches. It's quite a huge surface, you know. We've put photovoltaic panels on the car parks. It's really nice to replace the shelters that we had before. It's glass polycrystalline. It's really nice, and the light can come through. So it's also very user-friendly, I would say. The experience of the end user is nice. But the main thing is obviously that this will produce 3 gigawatt hour of power for the mall. It represents almost 8% of the global capacity of the mall.
And so you've taken up, what, two football pitches. How much roof space is actually left at the mall?
Well, we did only the car parks, yeah. So still there are space available, but we need to work into phases. Just because, as I used to say, you know, the technology for solar panels evolves very quickly, so it would not really make sense to cover the whole mall in one time. And then you have some potential expansion changes in the buildings that would make that you have to remove and start again. So we decided to work into phases.
Just talk to me through the particular photovoltaic cells. Are these the dark coloured ones that you see with lines, or are these the mirror type ones? What do they look like?
It's kind of mirror, but the light can come through, which is very important for car parks because it's really nice, you know. At the same time, it's a shelter, so your car is protected from the sun, but it's very bright.
I think, you know, you were talking there about Majidel Futaim taking the decision to do this, but Enova was actually created in 2002 as a joint venture between Majidel Futaim and, of course, French alternative giant Veolia. The full title, Enova by Veolia. And we've had the CEO, the global CEO of Veolia Environnement on the studio, I think, last year. And it's a world leader in technology in water, waste and power. So how far do you think Enova could go in bringing the rest of Veolia technologies to Dubai?
Well, thank you for mentioning, because this partnership between Majidel Futaim and Veolia is key. We used to talk about a co-construction. Majidel Futaim being a local regional leader in the market with a lot of facilities and this pioneering vision on sustainability, and Veolia being the world leader in environmental services. So we are really the match of those two, and we are proud to be really innovative in the region when it comes to renewable energy and energy management solutions.
Let's talk about the economics of this. You're part of the Majidel Futaim Group. Mall of the Emirates is owned by Majidel Futaim Group. To what extent is this just Majidel Futaim doing the right thing, almost a CSR program? And to what extent is this a financially and economically viable solution that you could conceivably sell to any number of other companies, shopping malls, office blocks, etc.?
Things have changed dramatically in the region when it comes to renewable energies. First of all, we have, thanks to the Dubai clean energy strategy 2050, we have now a comprehensive legislative framework, which is very important and changed dramatically the way we can look at sustainable and renewable energy solutions in the region. It has made a draw, because with the big solar parks and now with the programs, with the Shams programs on buildings and households, it has drawn the prices down. If we look at the prices of the solar park in 2015, we were at 5.84 US cents per kilowatt hour. We are now below 2. For the building, it's another story, but the prices have completely decreased. That's incredible. So now this technology is really affordable, and we managed to be lower than the electricity tariff on the grid.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us, and we look forward to having you back. Anne Le Guenec, the CEO of Enova, the joint venture between Majid Al-Futtaim and the French alternative energy giant Veolia, previously known as Veolia Environnement. Thank you very much indeed for coming to the studio this morning.
Thank you.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
China. Yes. US and China launching trade talks today. Of course, they want to avert a damaging tariff war if they can. One of the things that's interesting is that the White House's harshest China critic has been relegated to a supporting role, according to senior officials within the Trump administration. Now, this is Peter Navarro. He's the White House trade and manufacturing advisor, and he's not going to be a principal player on the US side, according to insiders. The US Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and the US Trade Representative, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, they're going to lead the American delegation in talks with the Chinese Vice Premier Li He. He's the top economic advisor to President Xi Jinping. So it's not the Premier's meeting, but it's about as high up as you can get without having those two in the room. Zhang Zhengshen is of Mizuho Securities Asia. In fact, he's the chief of their Asia business. He says the presence of such senior figures in the room means he is confident about the talks.
I'm pretty optimistic. I think there's maybe some concrete result can come out, at least to avert the immediate tariff war or trade war between China and the U.S. I think it's quite clear the very senior official from China coming to America again just after 2 weeks of intense trade talk in Beijing. Mm. So definitely there's something already concrete will come out.
And Zhang Guanshen went on to say that he expects both sides to move from their current fairly strident positions.
Concession is probably the mutual, right? So both benefits from trade. You know? Okay. And so that's why in the U.S. you will see that there's over 2,700 companies. Actually, it's already, you know, voiced their concern about the U.S. this tariff on Chinese goods. Already. So from the U.S. side, of course, a lot of companies will hurt if there is a big trade war between these two countries. From Chinese side, because Chinese export is the biggest in the world, Chinese number one exporter in the world. So any agreement, negotiate outcome will be better in any case than the trade war. So definitely, China definitely will already, you know, express their willingness to compromise, right? The Chinese leader, Mr. Xi, already said in Boao Forum that China going to cut tariff, especially in auto, mobile trade, and also increased imports. You know, the first import exhibition in China will actually showcase how much China willing to import. So I think that's not only a concession, but also the Chinese own strategy to boost the domestic demand, right? To increase the consumption. So I don't think it's a bigger, you know, negative for China.
That's Zhang Zhengshen. He's of Mizuho Securities in Asia, and he's fairly upbeat and bullish about those talks. They do begin today.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
One of our headline stories this morning, Morgan Stanley saying oil's going to hit $90 a barrel within 2 years. And Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, say that Saudi Arabia is on track to reduce its fiscal deficit this year as oil prices forecast to steady at around $70 a barrel for this year. The MENA economist Jean-Michel Saliba said Saudi deficit $34.3 billion in the first quarter of the year, and based on $70 oil, Saudi deficit could narrow to 195 billion Saudi riyals, representing a 6.3% of gross domestic product. And of course, higher oil prices is generally good for this region, Rich.
Indeed, staying with oil, but here in the UAE, because earlier on this week, Abu Dhabi National Oil Company announced a massive 165 billion, with a B, dirham expansion down its Ruwais facility between Abu Dhabi capital and the Saudi border. It's refining and it's petrochemical, so it's the downstream energy industry. Sean Evers of the Gulf Intelligence was there. We'll hear from him in a second, but first of all, we'll hear from the boss of ADNOC, Sultan Al Jaber, explaining what they're doing and why they're doing it.
At the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, our strategy is very much centered around value maximization. And the downstream strategy or expansion plan, which was announced earlier today at the ADNOC's Downstream Investment Forum, will help stretch the dollar from every barrel we produce. Our commitment to this new plan is backed by the leadership here in Abu Dhabi, who have supported us with a $45 billion allocation to invest in this new downstream expansion plan.
Sean Evers of Gulf Intelligence was in the room. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, Richard. Malcolm.
In a region that's used to big energy deals, how big a deal is this?
It's certainly a significant indicator of the departure as to where Abu Dhabi is going next. I would say, for me, the bigger headline is Abu Dhabi going back to basics. You know, after a decade of taking a detour down the what I might describe as the Dubai Road of Yas Island, Saadiyat Island, the Louvre, all of these very big shiny items. But that's not Abu Dhabi's bread and butter. Abu Dhabi's bread and butter is industry, it's oil, it's one of the world's largest producers of hydrocarbons. And here we have them going back to their basics of moving down the value chain of their primary product. The headline $45 billion is, of course, very important because that's a lot of money to spend. But, of course, there's a lot of details on that over how what time horizon, exactly what is that money going to do? Is that a dollar number that is that partners are going to invest? Are they going to match that with what other investors do? So I think the headline dollar number is certainly a big one, but I think the bigger headline here is Abu Dhabi getting back to basics after a sort of decade of slight distractions.
People in the room, and Sultan Al Jaber said he wants partners on this, included Bob Dudley, who's the boss of one of the world's biggest oil companies, BP. How much appetite is there from foreign investors for this project?
Well, I think we will see. I mean, clearly there is a move across the world towards integrated production, if you like. So you're essentially involved in the whole value chain of the hydrocarbon. So it's not just dig the oil out of the ground, put it on a ship, and sell it to somebody else, who then in turn does something with it and converts it into all the lovely products that we consume every day. Your iPhone, your toaster at home, and so on. All of these things originate as a hydrocarbon, and somebody converts them into a high value product. So it certainly makes sense for us to do that here in Abu Dhabi, of course, because they have the advantage of owning the hydrocarbon. But the likes of Bob Dudley and others, you know, the BPs and the major producer, Bob Dudley was there, CEO of BP, of course, a player in Abu Dhabi. But, you know, just from a reference point of view, you didn't have the head of Shell there. You didn't have the head of ExxonMobil. You didn't have the head of many companies, while you had the head of some. So you can't judge by their presence that de facto they are going to be a player. The reality is it's a big world out there. There's lots of opportunities. There's lots of investment. If you take who was there, the Indian oil minister, as well as the head of Indian Oil, they've just announced recently the plans for a $45 billion refinery complex in India, in which Saudi Aramco is the partner, and there's now reports that ADNOC is going into. So just for the purposes of scale, that $45 billion project that India is doing is literally only one of many. So the scale of opportunity in India and in other consuming markets is massive. So if you're BP and if you're Bob Dudley and if you're his peer group, you're looking across the whole horizon of all these opportunities, of which Ruwais and Abu Dhabi sits in the middle of. And Abu Dhabi will have to compete for that investment dollar like everybody else.
Sean Evers, Managing Partner of Gulf Intelligence. Always a pleasure. Appreciate your time.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
Ramadan Kareem, welcome to the Business Breakfast today, the first day of Ramadan 2018. Thanks for listening to the Business Breakfast. We're talking about oil, we're talking about China trade, we are talking about toys. US toy industry, Richard, looking set for a flurry of mergers and acquisitions. Why? All down to the Toys R Us bankruptcy. This is because the smaller toy companies are not getting shelf space because retailers are increasingly picky about allocating display space. And we're talking about the big department stores, a lot of it now. They prefer sort of the billion-dollar well-known brands like Mattel's Barbie, Hot Wheels, Hasbro, Marvel superhero action. If you're a young young brand, say the China Market Research Group, it is really hard to get shelf space. It's really hard to be found on the market. So they say that the smaller companies can't develop relations with mass retailers who have the country's biggest toy department. So what it looks like is that consolidation will help the smaller toy firms get their name out there and get products on the shelves, as they'll have a bigger portfolio of products for a mass market to choose from. I think this is vitally important. I think there's a range of toys to make kids think and play with different things rather than just the same old, same old. It is really important for kids' development. Some of the sort of bizarre toys from my youth, I'm just trying to think what sort of things they were, but many and various, and I absolutely loved the variety of toys. It would be awful if it was just, as they say, sort of G.I. Joe and Barbie, wouldn't it?
And there's a lot of thought that goes into these toys, because the toy makers know well and good that parents are far more, grandparents, far more inclined to buy toys that have some kind of educational slant. Science toys, for example, are very popular now. You go into a toy shop here and you'll see lots of make your own volcano type toys. And it's not necessarily because the kids want them. I mean, they quite like them. It's because parents like buying them. You feel better buying your kids toys that are developmental in some way. And the toy makers have latched onto this. And if you did edutainment, and many toys do strike a good balance between that. That's in many ways the sweet spot. But as with any industry, a lot of the innovation comes from the small independents. Some of it comes from the big companies and their innovation labs, but a lot of it comes from small independents. So you need a space for them to thrive.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the deals that are around, and they're quite big deals. I mean, Hasbro's spent $522 million purchasing several franchises, including Power Rangers and Julius Jr. from Saban Properties. That was the Los Angeles-based firm credited to have launched Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Play Monster, which was maker of the 5-Second Rule card game. Have you heard of that?
Never heard of it.
No, it sounds interesting. The 5-Second Rule card game. They've bought Kidder Toys. Canadian toy maker Spin Master bought plush toy maker Gund for about $79 million. So a lot of consolidation, and not necessarily for financial reasons, but this is how you're going to get shelf space, basically. They're too small individually, so maybe we could see sort of some of the really big companies, or maybe a sort of big company emerging from lots of small ones to challenge the likes of Mattel and Hasbro.
This is the Business Breakfast.
Stay one step ahead with Dubai Eye 103.8.
You've been listening to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And the Petit Déjeuner du Commerce, I think it would be in French, wouldn't it? In honour of our French guests on the programme this morning.
If you want to hear more from the Business Breakfast, don't forget you can, as always, download the podcast of all of the interviews from our website, DubaiEye1038.com.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.